Hello and welcome back to another day here at the Damage Report. Today is Wednesday, which is big for two reasons. One is that we are in the thick of the impeachment trial and we're going to be talking about that quite a bit. And the other is the answer to the question, who is we? We is me and J.R. Jackson. J.R., how's it going?
I'm just excited for the day. If yesterday being the first day of impeachment was a Wednesday, that would be a bit more fitting. But there's an outside chance we're going to see more fireworks today, strictly because it's a Wednesday and Wednesdays never fail. Yeah. So we'll make sure I get my, I had popcorn last time, I got my box ready. I'm at the show.
Are those sweet tarts?
We're going to watch this thing, man. Oh, we're going to tear it up. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
I mean, look, I'm not a big fan.
Get your sweet tarts, get your Coke, get your soft pretzels, man. I don't care. Let's watch it.
That sounds fine, but there is nothing I want to eat less in the morning than sweet tarts.
Or maybe an Eggo sandwich. Maybe you have an Eggo sandwich smashed between your Pop Tarts, maybe, Jim.
See why you gotta say that. I'm a guy who literally just ate two Eggos as a sandwich, and yet I can still speak from a position of moral authority that your sweet tart snack is weird. Anyway. Thank you for being here, snacks notwithstanding. Glad to have you here. Today is a big news day, though, because not only do we get what's going to be happening during the show, the second day of the impeachment, we get to respond to the first day. So it's bigger than if it was the first day today, because we can actually talk about it now. So we are going to be talking about some of the big developments from the impeachment, as well as previews of some of the potential bombshells, they say. What's a smaller bombshell? The potential news grenades? That might happen later on today. Reactions to the first day. We've got some more crazies, both in and outside of Congress. One of my predictions about Fox News is looking more and more true with every passing day. So prepare for me to be unbearable and more besides. But thank you, everyone, for being here and joining us for this hour of the news. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already so that people know that we're live. And as we go along, if you send us comments and tweets and Twitches and super chats and all that, we will respond to your questions and concerns. All of that said, JR, ready to do this thing?
I'm down.
You got enough sweet tarts? You want to get a second box?
I'm hyped up, man. I'm be eating this the whole time.
Okay, let's do it. Well, yeah, you're going to be on a sugar high for your sweet tarts. Anyway, okay, let's. With the spirit of a guy who's eaten too many sweet tarts, let's jump into this thing. Yesterday, the first day of the impeachment trial started off with a bit of a bang, with the Democrats unveiling a video sort of summarizing the timeline of what happened on January 6th with Trump's speech and the violence, and then how Trump was begrudgingly forced to sort of tell them to go home. It's about 13 minutes long. It is available online. Obviously, we're not going to play the full thing, but here are a few of the highlights.
The steal. Today, I will.
We outnumber you a million to one out here.
Take the building! Take the building!
Such a thing happened where they could take it away from all of us, from me, from you, from our country. This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what
I mean, look, there was so much more there, but this whole thing is madness that there is any question at all with what he said, what all of his followers were saying that he said. All of them say that they were there for him. And then when like him telling them to go home, sort of, he was just saying, yeah, no, this is what happens. They stole the election from you. I love you, you're special. And then his tweet after, people were dead, bodies were already on the ground. And he's saying, this is what happens when they steal an election. And they're still saying, no, he didn't incite it. He had nothing to do with it. It is like we if you pay attention to politics on a daily basis, you have to deal with a lot of bad faith BS. You have to deal with a lot of people who are clearly lying. But this is as dishonest to say that he bears no responsibility, that nothing should be done. This is the ultimate of that thing that is so core to our politics.
Yeah, if you can imagine, and I know this is the same argument it's made all the times, if they were actually looking at this case from someone that they didn't like, that they didn't support, that didn't uplift their party, because obviously this is a partisan thing for the Republicans to make sure that they uphold Donald Trump's, I don't know, they're not keeping him in office because he got voted out. But to make sure they uphold his name, whatever they need to do to continue to please these folks like the ones that ran and ransacked the Capitol. The fact that they have to go this far and this with this disingenuous type of approach, just it shows the reasons why they didn't want to have this trial in the first place. Because they knew, remember, they kept saying, hey, we already know what we're going to vote for. We already know how this is going to go. They made sure they wanted to make sure that this thing wouldn't get shown to the entire country in this manner. And then after all that, they're still going to acquit him. So that's going to make them look even worse, because anyone who looks at this will go, well, this is open and shut. 2 + 2 = 4, right? And then nearly every Republican senator will say, yeah, you know what? 2 + 3 = 3. 2 + 2 = 3 this time. I'm just saying, it's just the way it's going to work out for us. And they look worse. They didn't want to have to be put in this situation. And now I wonder what they're going to do about it.
Yeah, I mean, they said that they didn't want the clips played ahead of time for obvious reasons, because the clips are damning. They don't want Trump's speech played. They don't want the footage of the attacks played, because they have been, since January 6th, starting on January 6th, they've been doing two things. One, they've been lying about what happened. And two, they've been desperately, desperately, desperately hoping that you forget what happened. But when you see that crowd chanting, no Trump, no peace, as they rip riot shields away from cops, as they bust in there, like, we need patriots to the front. That isn't, well, we were just walking, like, we were just visiting to see the art. No, it was a violent mob. That's all it was. And so many people, some obvious, you know, on the right, have tried to redefine what that was. But a lot of people, I think, because it's been a bit and a lot has happened since then, have allowed themselves to go along with it. No, it was everything that you remember. That crowd that he loved and is very special. And this is what happens when they unceremoniously steal an election. Remember, he was still saying it was stolen after. He's still saying it was stolen now. Like, after all of this, he's still saying that it's stolen. His lawyer came out yesterday and said that he had lost, but Trump still has not admitted that he lost. I get that, like, none of this changes the outcome. None of this has any effect. While that video was playing, people like Rand Paul were like doodling in notebooks. Yep. Like, I find this so boring that this mob wanted to kill me and they murdered a cop. I'm just bored by this, because we're not governed by serious people. We're not governed by sane people. We're not governed by people who feel any obligation to democracy or the Constitution or any norms or the constituents or anything like that. They're just, they're political animals. They're concerned about their political careers. They're concerned about not getting canceled by Fox News or whatever, so they can keep selling stupid books. The whole thing is just so, so pointless, and it's not going away.
There was one small other point of that video, of part of that video, that because I went through a lot of it yesterday, where at that, again, the speech that incited them to finally make their move, he said, you know, when there's a fraud, when you bust someone for fraud, he goes, the rules change. You suddenly don't have to do things by those same rules anymore. In other words, hey, normally we wouldn't be storming the Capitol, but in this particular instance, since the election was stolen from me and you and the American people, we have to take our country back, and the rules have changed. What else does that mean? So we had Sarah Palin on Good Morning Britain yesterday and everything, and what they need, in her ridiculous argument, what they need is for Donald Trump to say, hey, everybody, every one of you, and number how many people are there, all of you must go to the Capitol right now, break through the window, grab a fire hydrant, grab a fire extinguisher, throw it at people, take your flags and bang through the windows. Hey, cuss at people, tell them you're gonna come find them, chase Capitol Police around. He has to say explicitly everything that you did in order for you to believe that he incited them to do it. It doesn't make any sense, and they don't really believe it either. It's just, let's just get through this so we can go ahead and acquit him over nothing.
Exactly. None of it's true. They don't actually believe that it wasn't incitement. They don't actually believe that you can't convict a guy that when he's not the president anymore. And them saying, well, this is gonna open the door to us doing it in the future. No, nothing's, no doors being opened. Republicans don't have doors and doorways. They just go wherever they want. That's what they're doing. Nothing is changing based on this. And also, let's remember, it's only a couple of weeks ago, so it shouldn't be too hard to remember. The only reason we're debating whether you can convict a president who's not the president anymore is because the Republicans didn't allow the trial to go forward before the inauguration. Okay, so they stopped it from going forward, and then they said, well, now it's too late. Teehee, oh, look at the situation we ended up in. No, I'm not stupid, I'm not a child, I know what you did. And we know that you don't think that you can't convict someone who's not president anymore. There's no January exception, there's no the purge in late January where a president can do whatever they want and then just squeak through to the inauguration and then there's no consequences. That isn't how it works.
Not at all.
Now, early on yesterday, there had to be a vote on whether the trial would even continue, this sort of vote over the constitutionality of it all. And so 6 Republicans ended up siding with the Democrats and saying that the trial could continue. And that is a result of some of them, including Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, and that I'll never get tired of saying that, taking sort of a different stance on this than you might have imagined a couple of weeks ago. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is signaling now to fellow Republicans that the final vote on Donald Trump's impeachment is a matter of conscience, and that senators who disputed the constitutionality of the trial could still vote to convict the former president, according to 3 people familiar with his thinking. Okay, I guess that's good. I don't think there's a lot of them that are like, oh good, my conscience has been freed up to be exercised. Anyway, he says that he also hasn't made up his mind on how he'll vote, even though he voted Tuesday to declare it unconstitutional for the Senate to hear the case against a former president. So this seems like, I wanna like send the signal so that people will say I'm being reasonable, but I also tried to stop this thing from happening in the first place. So not a lot of credit coming from me. I don't know, what about
it's
you?
It's not like this maze that Mitch McConnell has built that's hard to navigate. He's done this before. He did it a few weeks ago when Trump was mad at him because he left the door open for impeachment. Like he's leaving the door open for impeachment again now. Oh, Mitch McConnell's, it's insinuating 5% of the time that he might actually vote for impeachment. Hey, let's give Mitch McConnell credit for being a normal human being. No, let's not give him credit for being a normal human being because he's not. He's playing this back and forth game that Ted Cruz likes to play. Except Ted Cruz talks too much. Mitch McConnell just kind of insinuates and let other people say what he has to say. That's the only thing that's different between him and Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz likes to put his face in front of the TV all the time and say the ridiculous things he says. But in this case, Mitch McConnell continues to play that both sides game and then hopefully continue to get support from people who aren't paying attention to what he's always done. And now he's the one, as you already mentioned, is the one who didn't allow this to get to the point where we can have this trial adjudicated previous to the new administration coming in or to Trump.
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah. But that's not gonna be part of the reports. The reports are always, hey, Mitch McConnell leaves the door open for impeachment. Is he on the fence? Did the trial lawyers convince him in a way? No, they didn't. He's not listening. He's sitting there just like Rand Paul, flipping through his phone or whatever he's looking at, not paying attention because his mind is made up.
Yep, totally. Now, it's not just him. We have Republican Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana who joined Democrats in voting against ending the impeachment trial. Being described as a surprise reversal, because Cassidy said it was a response to the former president's lawyers doing a terrible job of arguing their case. He said after the vote, they talked about many things, but they didn't talk about the issue at hand. The senator said his decision to move ahead with the trial shouldn't be taken as a sign he will later vote to convict the former president. I have not yet decided on how I will vote. So he says because they did such a terrible job, and we'll be talking about the job they did later on, we're not gonna focus too much on that right now, that is why he decided to let it proceed. That's weird. I mean, I guess you ended up in the right spot, but how bad does a lawyer have to be for you to suddenly think that which might not have been constitutional is now definitely constitutional? I don't know. I guess he voted to proceed. That's good. But this whole thing's really weird.
Okay. I don't know, maybe the open-mindedness is the right thing to come into this trial looking open-mindedness. And this is just on the subject of whether or not it's constitutional to try a former president. So that's what was Bill Cassidy was convinced of yesterday. Not going into it with his own brain realizing that it's allowed, but he had to wait for someone to make the case. Now, if his lawyers, if Trump's lawyers weren't completely incompetent, would Bill Cassidy have been like, oh, it made two sentences that made sense, that spoke to me. So therefore, yeah, I'm back on it being unconstitutional. Really, what could they have said that would have convinced you that it was unconstitutional to continue on with this? What could I would love for these follow-up questions. But instead, like Mitch McConnell, what we get is Bill Cassidy. Bill Cassidy speaks his conscience, open-minded conservative. Can't believe he came forward and voted that way. I can, because he's playing the media the same way that Mitch McConnell's trying to play the media and the same way that Ted Cruz tries to play the media. Maybe it'll work out for Cassidy, I don't know. But when we see the final vote, you know what we're not gonna see? Bill Cassidy, who voted to acquit Donald Trump previous to that, said he didn't know what he was gonna vote for. But in reality, we can tell that he always knew what he was gonna vote for, because he's always been playing this politically, because everyone's out for themselves. They're trying to test the winds and see where they can land and make sure they continue their careers. That's all this is.
Yeah, and look, I know anything could happen. The people, their conscience could come into play, and then they could all 17 Republicans could decide to stand with the party or with the country instead of the party. Yeah, sure. But anyway, and I know some people are probably disappointed with us in the audience. And aside from that, like in not thinking that there's any hope. And then aside from that, I've seen on Twitter lately, there's been like the media is so focused on the fact that it's probably not gonna happen, when they should be focusing more on the fact that he's definitely guilty. And look, I'm down for media criticism. I feel like we've done that. I feel like we're very clear about how guilty he is. I feel like everything, I would say reality, is very clear about how guilty he is. If you are a person that is in the chat right now that is on the fence about whether he's guilty and thinks that us devoting 10 more minutes to it might sway you, feel free to post a comment. I don't think you exist. I think that everybody knows. I think that we all know, and we've all known for a very long time. He was inciting violence long before January 6th, as we'll turn to in just a few minutes.
Absolutely, I'm ready.
Okay, let's do that then. Here's one of the potential bombshells or tiny little bomb, little grenades. It's a popper that might come up to sort of lay the groundwork for the case in the trial that Trump was inciting violence. And that is past support for violent acts, of which there are many. I mean, we could go with, you know, him saying that he could shoot people. We could go with him saying that if you punch a protester in the face, he'll pay your legal bills. He's been doing this a lot. But that said, there was something just in the run up to the election that was very clear. Now, do you remember this video?
I'm about to run out of gas, which I'm sure some of you would love. Look at that.
So that was a few months ago, and that was a caravan of Trump fans trying to run a Biden-Harris bus off the road. Now, Biden-Harris were not in there, it was campaign volunteers. But they were doing that. They were crowding around it, getting right on top of it, trying to scare the hell out of these campaign advisors with their, you know, their flags and all of that. Now, after that happened, Trump tweeted a stylized video of the caravan and captioned it, "I love Texas." Days later, he declared that these patriots, in his words, did nothing wrong. And this is in the House trial memorandum. So they were violently threatening with their cars these volunteers in a way that, like, it seems like, I don't like the trying to demonize freedom riders and things like that. That's what it looks like, trying to terrorize these people. And Trump called them patriots, says, "I love Texas." Like, that only obviously increases the chance that other people would do it. And by the way, it happened in other places. These caravans of Trump supporters started rolling out all over the country in different places. And I don't know, like I think it's a pretty clear example of him being very supportive of his fans engaging in incredibly reckless and violent activity.
He's always been that way. And it checks right along with the way he's always done this. And that's why they've been inspired to do those things. That's why he couldn't denounce Proud Boys at the debate. That's why he can never talk about what they've actually been doing from Charlottesville to any of these acts. And you pointed out the rallies from the beginning. This has been the standard, the way he approaches politics from the beginning. So as they get more and more riled up, as long as they're not coming after him, This is great, but they're not going to come after him. He's the leader of this group. It's weird. Like, they're mad at every politician. They want to storm the Capitol, but there's no thought of storming the White House. There's no swampiness there because he's convinced them he is the Messiah and go after those folks. Now, with the caravan, what is it that they're trying to do? I saw some of the supporters of this also saying, ha, 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 look, they're escorting them out of town. It's very nice. So obviously they're being sarcastic. So what is it that they were trying to do? You can deny that they were trying to intimidate them. You can deny that they were trying to run them off the road because we didn't see them actually run off the road because the bus didn't flip. Okay, so yeah, oh, they're in the clear. What were they trying to do then? You're denying what people are saying that they were trying to do. So what is the answer? Let's talk them. What were they trying to do? What were they out there for? They just happened to be next to the Biden-Harris bus, which Biden and Harris were not in. And what's it doing that's going to intimidate these campaign workers? What's going to change about that? It's strictly just to show their president, look, we're carrying out the potential violent actions that you're priming us to carry out. We are ready to go. Give us the signal. That's all it is.
I mean, you could go back through so much of this. I mean, like, here's a small one. You remember like a couple months ago when a bunch of militia members wanted to kidnap and try and probably execute Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan? When it was announced, Trump's response was, Whitmer has done a terrible job.
Yep.
They just found out that there was a terrorist plot to kidnap and murder a female politician. His response was, she's done a terrible job. Oh, I forgot. And she should thank the federal government for stopping her kidnap and murder. His frustration was that she wasn't being appreciative enough of the fact that the plot had been stopped. So again, we get these instances where people who love and worship him want to terrorize people, to murder people, and he attacks those who've been targeted rather than those doing it. Again, all of this should be a part of that trial. Not that it matters, because we don't live in a real democracy and these Republican senators aren't human, but it should definitely be a part of the historical record, if nothing else.
Well, we'll see now, if that ever gets there.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Apparently, Trump's lawyer's performance, which was pretty universally panned, also had a pretty bad reaction from Trump himself. Here is Caitlin Collins talking about sources' portrayal of Trump's reaction. What happened?
Not think that was a strong opening argument, and then to have the first attorney admit that he believed the House impeachment managers did a good job also was confusing to a lot of people on the president's team. But yes, Trump was not happy with that performance. He was borderline screaming over what was going on as he was talking to people about this.
Okay, so he wasn't happy and I sort of get that. I don't know though, saying like he was borderline screaming, how far off of that is he in the best of times? Like, I don't know. Like, they say that, you know, he often leaves television on in the background even when he's holding meetings. I'm not surprised by that. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the angriest, Mr. Trump was an 8, one person said. But like, is that a normal person's 1 to 10? Because I feel like a lot of Trump's time is spent on the 7.8 to 10 meter, occasionally busting through 10 like the Kool-Aid man again. He's always mad. And in this case, dude, you sort of set the situation up for yourself. Like, you don't want to pay lawyers. You've made yourself a terrible person to try to defend. Nobody can trust you to actually go on the stand yourself. And your strategy leading up to the trial of wanting to relitigate whether the election was a fraud or not, effectively saying you can't impeach me for creating this insurgency because I say it's a fraud, because it really was a fraud, is not the strongest defense in the world. And so his whole team left leading up to it. And so this is what he's left with. People who ramble and talk about how the Senate's great and how, man, the other side did a really good job. I don't know what I'm going to do now. Like, that's pretty much what he has left.
That's the first thing I was wondering. I said, what does an 8 out of 10 look like for Donald Trump screaming? I don't know, maybe because the outlets haven't been there for all the social media accounts where he can scream there in all caps. So I don't know if it's built up and an 8 is actually like a normal 10 for people. Who knows? But what does that look like to me? Who knows? But the other part of this is, as you mentioned, he's like rid of every attorney that has any kind of a thought process to work for him. And I don't know if you get into, but Jim Acosta also said he can't find anyone to work for him. And if he gets any other kind of trial in any other court, he's gonna be screwed because no one will represent him. No one that has a brain will represent him. And in fact, I read real quick in a quick blurb on Washington Post, one of his attorneys that's on his legal team last year was part of a lawsuit against him over the mail-in voting fraud talk, saying like he's saying all this about mail-in voting and how it's fraudulent with no evidence whatsoever. Now you're on his legal team. It just it continues to show the only folks that are left are the ones that are like, okay, I'll take it. Yeah. I mean, I hope you pay me. That's all that's left. And this is what he's working with. So you can be upset at your attorneys all you want, but they're working with a case that there's nothing they can do anything with. People who are smart enough are like, I'm not touching this. This is garbage. That's why you're left with this. It's your fault, Donald.
Yeah, I think they feel pretty confident that they're probably not gonna get paid in the end anyway. In theory, some of them might take these cases because it'll be high profile and maybe that'll help them, but not as likely as in other cases because Trump is gonna undercut you. He's definitely gonna end up, like, whether he gets acquitted or not, which he probably will, he's probably gonna end up publicly attacking his lawyers. So why would you go through all of that? In the end, at some point, he'll end up in other trials having to like pay in advance a couple million dollars. Maybe he'll get someone to defend him. But for now, it's like he's lucky he didn't end up with, I don't know, Charlie Kelly's uncle from Always Sunny defending him, or Joe Pesci maybe. I don't know. That's what he's got. Now,
that'd be better.
It wasn't just, well, he was also mad that, or he was heartened that his other lawyer, Mr. Schoen, who we're gonna show in a little bit, gave a more spirited performance, but he ended the day frustrated and irate. Again, I think that's standard operating procedure for him. I think he ends up frustrated and irate a lot. But other Trump allies said privately that some members of the legal team seemed surprised by the raw clips from the riot that the Democrats showed, even though the House managers had signaled for days that that was their plan. We talked about it. That was 100% gonna be their plan, that they were gonna show it. Did they not take a look at the video coming out of that and know that it was gonna be bad? How do you get surprised by that?
Well, I guess they worked for the Capitol Police as well, because they were surprised by the fact that the insurrection even happened, because everyone was talking about how they're planning to do this on January 6th. They're all talking about it. They're planning it. And we know there's pre-planning. In fact, it's part of their defense that somehow it was pre-planned. So therefore, Donald Trump wasn't part of inciting the pre-plan to go and attack the Capitol. No, that's whatever. None of it makes any sense. So they must be the same type of folks that didn't know what was going to happen in the Capitol. Who would have known? Oh my God. Wait. You mean the prosecution brought video of the insurrection when we're talking about impeaching the president for inciting the insurrection? This is crazy. I thought they were going to come with some bubble gum and sweet tarts.
Well, they were also confused over a last minute decision. This is Trump's team, was confused by a last minute decision to swap the order of his defense. Castor, who spoke first, one of the lawyers, had originally been scheduled to speak after David Schoen. People close to Trump thought their new strategy wasn't strong and did not appreciate when Castor praised the opposing side during his arguments. I mean, overall, they don't seem to have much of a defense because I don't know what you're supposed to say. And they don't seem particularly talented and quick on their feet, and they weren't prepared. I mean, like, you have to come to court really unprepared for the guy who can't get his cat filter to turn off to look like kind of a competent lawyer by comparison. You look worse than the kitty. You got issues.
Well, you know what? And honestly, the worst thing that this is an indictment on are the large number of Republican senators that have already said, after Rand Paul had his ridiculous vote, hey, we're gonna acquit him no matter what. So if I'm an attorney and I'm wondering if I'm gonna get paid and I don't feel like working, I'm like, well, maybe my face will be on TV in history. Why would I prepare? What do I have to prepare for? To convince people that already told me they're convinced? It doesn't matter what I do or say that they're gonna acquit my client. This is an easy job. I'm gonna walk in and go, so today is Tuesday. Glad you guys are here. I will see you later. That's all you gotta say, because who cares? They don't care.
That's true.
They already told you they don't care.
I know, that is the frustrating thing. Like, he could have, as he's talking and he's rambling on, he just gets hot and so he starts stripping down to his underwear and it wouldn't matter. It would not matter if he did. Like, I could continue to speculate. You know where this is going. None of it would matter, which is very frustrating. Partly because you're gonna have politicians like this. Now, this is an individual who is not going to be actually like involved in this process, but one of the few Republicans who seem to enjoy the chaos of the first day of the Trump trial is Jim Jordan, who had this to say.
I thought the president's team laid out what this is really about. This is about the Democrats trying to cancel the guy that 74 million Americans voted for. They've been obsessed with this. The obsession continues, so much so that they're willing to ignore the Constitution, willing to ignore due process, and frankly, willing to ignore the facts. I thought it was interesting when it comes to the facts that the video the Democrats played, nowhere in that video did they have the statement where the president said, peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. And of course, the president's counsel strongly, I think, very strongly made the case for how this is not constitutional. The simple fact remains, how do you remove someone?
Just keep the mask above your nose, you idiot. Jesus, anyway. Okay, so yes, he was very impressed. And like, for a person whose natural inclination is to, when you see a boot, extend your tongue and begin wagging it back and forth. The greatest opportunity for you is when everyone else is being critical of something you did, because now you get to be the one who's still looking the boot. People have temporarily retracted, most of them, their tongue from the boot sole, and you get to keep yours on there and get a little bit more praise. No, it wasn't a good performance, just like a lazy reference to canceling the president. God, Jim Jordan isn't great at this. And again, nothing matters. So I'm sure he'll end up being a senator or whatever, but it's just such a lazy, no brainless performance there.
Yeah, he had that whole explanation set up before yesterday even began. He could have made that statement to the media before everything started. Totally. I noticed that they didn't put in there peacefully, because at one point he said the word peaceful in his life. So therefore that means that that's the way they should approach this whole thing. Not all the millions of other times that he said, hey, let's go storm the Capitol right now. In fact, you've got his supporters that said, I was listening to my president who told me to storm the Capitol. In fact, I went there without the intention of storming the Capitol. The lady, I think she's a real estate agent from Texas. Jenna Ryan. She told us, I had no plans of storming the Capitol, but I got a little nervous and everyone was going that way and it felt like a football game. Let's go do it. That's what happened. So as these people keep telling you the reality of the story, hey, Jim, I noticed you didn't bring up all the people who stormed the Capitol that said the president told them to. It's weird how you didn't bring that part up, Jim. It's ridiculous. And again, he probably didn't listen. And if he did listen, he was like, what do those words mean? So it's,
yeah, he didn't listen.
It's just the way he approaches these things. He doesn't have to think. It's another lazy politician.
Yeah. Yeah, what they should do is they need to track down all of the people who are all fired up, gotta stop the steal, can't believe they did this to me. And then they go on January 6th and listen to the president and they're like, we're gonna take this thing and we're gonna find Prince and we're gonna string him up. And then Trump says, do it peacefully. And they're like, oh God, what was I about to do? I'm just gonna go home and think about democracy now. Because those people don't exist. None of that happened. Nobody was like, wait, mixed signals. He said peaceful. So now I'm not going to string anyone up. No, they understood the wink, wink, and the nudge, nudge on that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Anyway, Oh, by the way, I want to give kind of a little bit of credit to Jim Jordan, though, but really in the form of a warning. Mm-hmm. Because Jim Jordan, again, you've got your tongue on there and you are licking that boot. You're getting in there in the tread and everything, but you are treading on dangerous ground. Because did you hear one of the things he said in that little clip? It was subtle. A lot of people might have missed it. He said the 74 million voters. Okay, now is that mathematically correct? Yes, it was 74.2 million, which definitely rounds down to 74. But they have all agreed since then that it's 75. Every Republican says 75. They rounded up by 700,000, and he's not doing that. That's dangerous territory there. You don't want to fall in a bootlicking line behind people like Greg Gutfeld.
Yeah, you have to make sure you hold your spot.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta
have the hierarchy ready.
Yeah. Now, lots of people in the right-wing media were not happy with that first day of the Trump trial, although their feelings are probably buttressed by the fact that they know that none of it matters. Here is Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham expressing their frustrations last night.
Lawyer on the first lawyer who presented the case.
A little meandering, a little free associative. Go ahead.
It was terrible. I'm sorry.
Extemporaneous.
You're way too charitable. If you hired that guy in the case that you were paying the bills on, it would have been like, I'm sure you're a nice person, but enough praise toward the Democrats.
I was a little nervous in the beginning.
Oh my God.
How much time
could he spend praising the Democrats? The whole thing was like a walk down memory lane about how much he loves the Senate. And I mean, this was like story time at the trial. It was ridiculous. Sorry, I'm going to get into this, but I'm pretty worked up about it. Given what's at stake for the Constitution and the country.
The Constitution. Yeah, the Constitution's at risk over this. Yeah, it's about to crumble. Yeah.
So, look, I guess this is better than them pretending that it was great. I mean, usually they just say what they want to be true because that's what their audience wants to hear. For some reason, right-wing media seems to have agreed. And again, I think it's because they know that it doesn't matter. They've agreed that they can criticize this. But I do think like it's an opportunity, though, to potentially learn something. Why is it that this is the best defense that Donald Trump is able to put together? Either from the point of view of why is it that this is the only lawyer he can get to defend him? What led to that situation? And why is this the rhetorical best defense that he has? Why does it rest on such shaky ground? Like both of those, whether the sort of institutional or employment angle or the rhetorical angle, they could actually delve into that and try to figure out why Trump has ended up in this very low state. But they're not doing that. They're keeping it 100% shallow and 100% focused on the lawyer. His performance was bad. It has nothing to do with Trump. And so even in the moment, this is the closest either of them have come to criticizing the president in literally years. And even then, it's still miles away from actually coming to grips with what Trump is.
Yeah, it was way too far for them to even give any props to these attorneys because they couldn't wait. I'm sure every conservative in the country that's supporting Trump was trying to make sure that they said, okay, we had to prepare ourselves to say this is a great argument. But it was so far from that. They couldn't even come up with that. And they've done some reaching before with some ridiculous arguments, calling them great arguments. Every time Trump speaks, let's keep it real. But the main objective here, as you talked about, Jim Jordan is lining up to lick the boots. But the main objective here is to make sure you do not blame the guy who is to blame in any way. Don't blame him for the insurrection. Definitely don't blame him for this lack of a defense because there is none. You can't do that because Trump might get mad at you and he'll go to a 9 out of 10 if he screams at you now because you know he's watching you, Sean. You know he's watching you, Laura, because that's all he does. So we got to make sure we uphold our loyalty to the president, make sure he doesn't get upset at us.
Yeah, and look, honestly, in this situation, it really works out for them, especially if they know that Trump is watching. They're mocking the same guy that Trump is mocking behind the scenes and is enraged at. Trump hates that lawyer. They're mocking that lawyer. So it's like, it's almost like it's criticism, but it's criticism that Trump himself is gonna love. So, but anyway, the other lawyer, David Schoen, actually was on Sean Hannity's program. And there was a very interesting bit of his talk. Take a look at this.
Is they're using rhetoric that's just as inflammatory or more so. The problem is they don't really have followers. You know, they're dedicated followers. And so, you know, when they give their speeches. But this speech, I think right now you really are finding out about the pre-planning. And I'm afraid they're going to back off that investigation because maybe, you know, so many people want to tie it to Donald Trump. There's nothing they showed today that in any way ties us to Donald Trump. That, it's just a silly argument. It's not tied to Donald Trump or his speech whatsoever. So what they're doing now a bit is going back, well, you see, it's not just that speech. He's been, you know, inciting people, inflaming people. No, he's been rousing the American public to drain the swamp, whatever they call it on his side, to make a difference in this country. That's what political speech is.
That's the good lawyer, by the way. That's the one they like, JR. What do you think?
Oh my God. Okay, so
he's also not a cat.
As you brought up, they were, as he was bringing up at the beginning of that, oh, you know, these Democrats, they incite their people to violence all the time. I'm waiting for that violence that they incited when they say, hey, let's go march and do this. That didn't happen. But they don't incite their supporters to it because their supporters aren't loyal and dedicated enough. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
What point is that making again? Exactly?
Because now you're caught with, first off, let's obviously make the point that he's making, or finish that point that he's making, which was, hey, Donald Trump supporters wouldn't attack the Capitol because they're loyal and they'll do what their president tells them to do. These Democratic folks, their guys are just soft and just don't follow through. Sounds like they went off of his orders to go and attack the Capitol. Mm-hmm. They're caught with this mix of being able, of trying to make sure that they point out, because Trump needs this for his ego, my supporters are loyal, they'll do anything for me because that feeds him. But at the same time, they didn't do what I said because now illegality is gonna get me involved. Which one is it? Because number one rule for Donald Trump, promote Donald Trump, feed his ego, call him a messiah. That's all that matters. Everyone loves me, popularity. Then once the popularity turns into a criminal investigation, we're like, oh, well, you know, those guys didn't really support me. They just supported me.
I know that was, it was a weird one. It was like, because what they were trying to say was, lots of politicians say things that could be characterized as inciting violence. The only thing about the Dems is they don't have dedicated followers. But like the outcome that is different that you're defining is that Trump's fans do it. At the very least, that is a serious indictment of Trump's fans, if not of Trump. But that's at the very least what it is. And then he says, no, it's not. You can't just say it's not tied to him over and over. That's not a great defense. But moving past that, he says, all he's doing is rousing them to drain the swamp. But again, this isn't just a case, which would be serious enough, which is Trump is saying things and we're worried that someday it's gonna go too far. No, the militia guys already tried to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. They did try to run that bus off the road and they did storm the Capitol and kill people. So you're saying he's rousing them. That is the rousing. That's part of what it is. So I feel like, again, he doesn't really have to make a good argument because the jury is 100% biased, or at least I guess 50% biased in this case. But the case he's making is, Trump apparently should know that his followers are prone to violence. And when he rouses them regularly, they go and they attack people. But somehow, again, that's not on him.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't have to make sense. In fact, it's better if it doesn't. Because if it made sense, people would have to come to a conclusion. And the only conclusion when you logically think about this is, wait, they stormed the Capitol and the president incited them to do so. It's only a logical conclusion. Yeah. That's all you got left. So you have to make no sense in order to deny that.
Marjorie Taylor Greene apologized for her conspiracy theories like a week ago. She didn't really specifically apologize, but she said that she had learned and she would stop doing it, kind of. And that was a good couple of days. And now we've got this. She tweeted, this is yesterday. If the January 6 organizers were Trump supporters, then why did they attack us while we were objecting to electoral college votes for Joe Biden? The attack ruined our objection that we spent weeks preparing for, which devastated our efforts on behalf of Trump and his voters. The Capitol attack was planned and organized, not incited in the moment by President Trump, and no Republican member was involved. Well, Republican politicians were all across the country had flown in, but we were all victims that day. And once again, Trump is the victim of the never-ending hate-fueled witch hunt. This impeachment trial is a circus for the Democrat media mob to entertain the masses that they have brainwashed and addicted to hate. You literally talk about how Satan makes Democrats eat children's faces, but sure, we're the ones who are addicted to hate. So they don't see the Dem policies being rapidly forced into place that are destroying our lives, stealing our freedom, and putting America last. What does that mean? But anyway, a lot of that is bad, stupid, and conspiratorial. But the first tweet is saying she doesn't believe that those were Trump supporters in the Capitol attack. It feels like it's January 6th and 7th all over again. She still thinks that that was a false flag, that Antifa or the Democrats or some book clubs, I don't know, whoever, but definitely not Trump fans attacked the Capitol.
Glad she's not,
Joan Jair, go on.
I'm glad she's not pushing these QAnon conspiracy theories anymore, you know, considering she's in office now and she doesn't say anything off the wall or that doesn't make any sense. There's multiple aspects of that first tweet. I will let you finish, so I won't step on what you have. You still were going. I don't like interrupting you, Ida Roller.
No, just really, no, I was going on for a long time, so I don't mind it. So I don't remember. What was I saying?
Sorry. Well, this
oh, no, no, stuff. I do remember. Yeah. Yes. How many of the people who participated in it do we need to profile and go in depth on? And we find out about all their affiliations and Trump made me do it. That's why I did it. And like, please give me organic food if I admit that it was him. Where, and then the right wing media figures that were there in the Capitol, where's the Antifa? They've now rounded up dozens of people. None of them lefties. Isn't that weird? But she believes it because she is just as dim and conspiratorial as she was back before she was running for office. Reality has to become whatever it needs to be for her to feel comfortable. And what she needs to believe is nobody that believes like me would have possibly done something bad like this. Ergo, it has to be the other side that did it.
It's always the way it is. Also, apparently, according to Rob Portman, Nancy Pelosi was somehow involved in the planning. And this impeachment trial is a diversion. Yeah. Try and figure that one out. But let's flesh through the ridiculous nature of this tweet. So if it wasn't Trump supporters that stormed, that means it was anti-Trump folks or people who wanted to keep them from finishing their objection. So this goes, let's flesh this whole ridiculous tweet out. So they want to make sure they stop the objection from Ted Cruz and Hawley and probably one or two others, because those objections would have done what? Because, you know, libs and also Democrats, Biden folks, whatever point that this swamp and deep state was organized to storm the Capitol in the name of Donald Trump to somehow convict him, they were worried about you objecting to the election that they had clearly won and that Trump and his attorneys had been to court and had been laughed out of 60, 70 times. I lost count. But they were concerned that you were going to do what with your objections? Subvert the election? So you say you're going to subvert the election somehow. So, I mean, you're going to disenfranchise all these Biden supporters and voters because somehow that's okay. And number two, I thought that, you know, we trusted our election systems and you don't trust it at all. But this is the way this has all worked out for you. It doesn't make any sense that this is that we're concerned about you flipping the election. So therefore people ran and stormed the Capitol to stop you from doing it. You were about to lose. Part of the pressure was saying Mike Pence better do the right thing, because if he doesn't do the right thing, we lose today. You were going to lose that day. What would people be afraid of?
Well, and also she's a little bit separate from most of the Republicans now are saying, no, we weren't trying to like overturn the election. We were just like speaking out for our constituents. We were standing up for election security. She's saying, no, we wanted to overturn the results and we were stopped from doing that, because again, she doesn't admit that Trump lost. Like, she still believes that he won, or at least is saying it. And again, she is saying those people there were not Trump fans. So let's play this video. If that is true, then why, like, let's put this in the context and I'll explain.
Tomorrow, we're prepared to object to the stolen Electoral College votes. President Trump was reelected for 4 more years. Tomorrow is a very important day in America's history. We can't allow our integrity of our elections to be stolen. We must object to this vote. So let's get ready to fight for America tomorrow.
Okay. Yep. Fighting for America. Well, some people did come and they did fight for America. And remember again, none of those people, according to Marjorie Greene, were Trump fans. So why was Trump speaking to a huge crowd of Antifa about how it was stolen and they were cheering for it? Why did no Trump fans show up for that? Because they'd been trying to get them to come for literally months, but apparently none did come. Only Antifa came. And then after Antifa rampaged through the Capitol, killed, beat a cop to death, destroyed property. Why did Trump come out and say that he loved Antifa and Antifa are very special people? And this is just what happens. What Antifa did is perfectly fine. This is what happens when he's still in election. Why did that then happen? Why was Trump going along with the false flag that Marjorie Greene believes happened? But again, none of it has to make any sense because her brain is just an empty shell with a couple of like bouncy balls rolling around in it and there's a little bit of fuzz. That's about it. It's whatever. And there are like millions of people that think she nailed it. She's the one. She gets what's going on.
Oh, I really am trying to find myself through that maze of logic now. Because I thought it was just like one layer of this differentiation between reality, but it goes like three or four layers deep. So this is on purpose, by the way. So no matter where you're coming from, you can glum on to any aspect of these arguments and come up with a conclusion that makes sense enough to you for you to believe that it wasn't what it obviously was. Give them four different ridiculous scenarios, let them choose one. It'll be okay.
So here's the thing, it's sort of related. We've been saying since the 6th that not doing something about the people who inspired this, which Trump is obviously the biggest figure, but he is hardly the only person that contributed to this. And so it's a little bit frustrating that he's like the only person that's actually being investigated right now is going to lead to more people doing it. And I want to remind you all that there's a lot of Republicans out there that are getting increasingly comfortable with the sort of both rhetoric and possibly like clear acts of terrorist violence that we've been seeing that are still out there. And they're watching to see what happens. Let's talk about Michigan Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky, who was caught on tape making cracks about physical violence against Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who last year was the target of a kidnapping plot by right-wing militia extremists. So he was making cracks about her. We're going to define those. But understand that he's not that far off of Trump, who thought that when she had almost been kidnapped, there was really an issue of her not being appreciative enough. And she shouldn't have sucked at her job if she didn't want to be kidnapped and murdered by a militia. He was also, by the way, to tie this to Marjorie Greene, who we've been talking about, he was recorded spreading lies about the January 6th attack on the US Capitol that was carried out by pro-Trump insurrectionists, calling it a hoax and staged. He said that wasn't Trump's people. That's been a hoax from day one. That was all prearranged. Well, yes, it was prearranged by Trump. They were desperately trying and spending millions of dollars to get people there. And then as soon as it succeeds, Antifa did it. But anyway, it was arranged by someone who was funding it. It was all staged. Again, Trump, the reports have now shown like $3.5 million that were routed from Trump to organizers for the January 6th. So he's on to something, just not necessarily what he thinks. This guy, again, is the majority leader of the Senate in Michigan, Republican. He to define what he said about the governor, he bragged about metaphorically spanking the governor, saying we've spanked her so hard on the budget. This is a video that's on YouTube. Spanked her hard on appointments. At another point, he said, I did contemplate inviting her to a fist fight on the Capitol lawn. And he said all of this a week after the plot against her was revealed. So after we found out that these psychos wanted to kidnap her and at the very least murder her, he thought, well, we should be joking about spanking her, and I would have really loved to have punched her on the face on the Capitol lawn.
Because all that makes sense. All that is great for democracy. All that's great for unity. All that is will dispel the fact that you motivate people to go and commit violent acts against your political opponents, because all of that proves it. No, in fact, it pushes it further. Just you can say, I didn't say anything. By the way, this all goes to the same talking point. It's just in different ways from Marjorie Greene to everyone else. Trump's people are everywhere, I thought. Remember, there's Trumps in boats. There's Trumpers in golf carts. There's Trumpers in trucks, caravans of Trumpers. They're everywhere. That's why we know that he won the election. I'm not lying, that's one of the arguments. He won the election because of Trumpers in trucks. But at the same time, where the hell were all the Trumpers on January 6th?
Where did they go?
They're everywhere from January 20th of 2017 all the way up until January 5th. of 2021. Suddenly they're nowhere to be found. On January 6th, suddenly Antifa and libs and Bernie Sanders supporters are the ones holding Trump flags. So where the hell were they? They're at home? Did they stop? And all the rest of the time, heard the rabid supporters. In fact, your impeachment attorney told us they're rabid supporters and they motivated and they move. But on the day that he has a crowd full of people yelling and cheering at everything he says, they weren't there. Where were they?
Where were they? Yeah. There was some stuff that was going to be rotating off of Netflix and they wanted to watch it before it was gone. And a follow-up question that's being in the chat right now. Why did Charlie Kirk send dozens of buses full of Antifa to the Capitol? Like, why did he do this?
Deep state.
But again, this is what they believe. And let's see. Last week, Shirky expressed empathy for the Capitol rioters, saying it was people feeling oppressed and depressed, responding to what they thought was government just stealing their lives from them. And I'm not endorsing or supporting their actions, but I understand where they're coming from. You're 100% supporting their actions. But again, you don't think they did it. So was it just Antifa that was oppressed and depressed? And I'm not supporting Antifa, but like, I get why they did. None of this makes any sense. But after all of this, yesterday he issued a statement to the Detroit Free Press saying, I have many flaws. Being passionate, coupled with an occasional lapse in restraint of tongue, or at least two of them, I regret the words I chose and I apologize for my insensitive comments. That's sort of an apology, but when you say, God, you know, I'm too passionate, I'm too outspoken, and sometimes that gets me in trouble, that's like a humble brag apology. That's an honest one.
It's always the case. Every time Trump says something, then a Republican actually has to actually answer for it, gets questioned about it. They go, well, he's a little bit exuberant. You know, his tone could have been different. You know, yeah, you know, he was a little bit outside the box there. All these terms that are so like patty cake about what people say and do. I want to punch you in the face. Hey, go murder them. Hey, I will shoot someone in the middle of the street. I will bail you out if you do this for me. Oh, I wish his tone would have been different. I mean, he just gets a little bit out there sometimes. He's so passionate about what he feels. Hey, serial killers are passionate about their work too. That's why they keep doing it. Is it passionate? If he's on trial, should a serial killer not be, oh, you know what? He's just dedicated to his craft. Mm-hmm. No, he's a murderer.
Serial killers, what they need is more restraint of tongue. Restraint of tongue. Restraint of tongue is what like DJ Khaled exercises. Look it up. It's not like a thing where like, well, God, I just sort of said that I would like to punch the governor in the face. I shouldn't have gone that far. And he's, again, we pointed out because he's off there in state government, but he isn't like, he wasn't just elected. He's the majority leader saying all of this stuff. And he is every bit as crazy as Marjorie Greene. Now that said, we got one more song, and I'm mostly gonna pull through to this because what did I tell you? Okay. Yesterday was the first day of the impeachment trial, but Tucker Carlson wasn't having any of that. Rather than cover it, he addressed the pandemic, arguing that orthodoxies surrounding masks and social distancing had evolved without explanation and that any dissent was immediately being silenced. Again, this is one of those really cowardly Tucker Carlson traits where he doesn't want to actually criticize a thing, but he wants to criticize those who criticize those who criticize the thing. So he's defending crazy people, but he's not brave enough to actually be a crazy person. Except that I've been telling you for a couple of months now, what is one of the things Tucker Carlson is going to do to get his audience? And it is going to be that he's going to turn against the vaccine. And people were like, come on, that's crazy. He's not going to do that. Trump made the vaccine and it's what's gonna let us go back to normal. Why wouldn't that be a good thing? But I thought, no, it is too appealing to be able to get the crazies to follow him by saying, well, you know, we're just saying maybe you shouldn't take it. Take a look, this is from last night on Tucker Carlson.
When are we finally gonna repeal Corona law? And what about this vaccine? Why are Americans being discouraged from asking simple, straightforward questions about it? Questions like, how effective are these drugs? Are they safe? What's the miscarriage risk for pregnant women, for example? Is there a study on that? May we see it? And by the way, how much are the drug companies making off this stuff? Well, there's nothing QAnon about questions like that. They're not conspiracy theories. They're the most basic questions. In a democracy, every citizen has a right to know the answer. But instead, we got fluff and propaganda. The media rollout for the vaccine came off like a Diet Pepsi commercial at the Super Bowl. Tons of celebrity endorsements, not a lot of science. It was totally disingenuous, and naturally, it had the opposite of the intended effect. Most Americans already supported vaccines. They didn't need to be browbeaten in order to be convinced. They were grateful their kids no longer get tetanus and polio and chickenpox. They weren't anti-vaxxers. And yet, from the very first day, the way the authorities handled the COVID vaccine did not inspire confidence. If the vaccine was so great, why were all these people lying about it? Honest question. And they were lying. Clearly they were lying. You know that for certain.
Honest question. He's just an honest guy with questions. I mean, he's an honest, intellectually honest guy who said, if the vaccine is so good, why is the pandemic still here? Why didn't it immediately eradicate when people don't have the shot yet? That is a thing that he said. So if you want to gauge how intellectually honest he is, honest question, that's all. The condescending overpronouncing of every word. And I'm just saying, why were they lying? They were definitely lying. No, this is such a classic right-wing tactic. They have invented a thing to be opposed to. And the thing they're opposed to is the media was just browbeating us to take it. What browbeating was going on? What lying was going on? Some people were happy that finally there was a vaccine for a thing that had killed hundreds of thousands of Americans. And you found that to be frustrating because you helped contribute to those deaths. Oh, everybody already supported it. Everybody's just naturally in support of it. And all I'm going to do is going to spend the next 6 months of my show saying, we should be asking questions and I just want to know. And you'll notice that I'm not actually bringing any of the doctors on who did these trials. I'm not seriously finding out what the side effects are. I'm just going to focus really heavily on anecdotal side effects. And I'm just going to keep saying suspicion is totally warranted. These are basic questions, blah, blah, blah. So that anti-vaxxers will feel much more comfortable with my show than with others. And if it results in more people being questioning of the vaccine, it doesn't affect me. After all, he says he's gonna take it. And we know that all of them are gonna take it because they know how safe it is. He doesn't care if it ends up that some of his fans are exposed to more of the disease. If you want evidence of that, just watch any of his broadcasts over the last year. That has been the net effect of him during the pandemic. Has been to make people naturally question masks and social distancing, the most basic things he's been against. So it is not shocking that the next thing that they were talking up during the early parts of the pandemic, saying we don't need to do all this other stuff, we're gonna get a vaccine. Now he's against that too. I told people it was coming and it is getting worse. It's not just him, by the way. Laura Ingraham's been doing it too, but he's been consistently doing this now for more than a month.
I remember when Trump was nearing the end of his term, and then people were saying, wait till these Democrats and these libs, once he's out of office, suddenly they're gonna trust the vaccine. But when he's in office, they don't trust it. Well, because he's been lying, first of all, about like the rollout, exactly what it is, saying he developed it, all this other stuff that just, he's been manipulating information since the beginning. So that's the reason not to trust him. So fine, I'm actually okay with that argument. And you say, look how disingenuous these libs are. As soon as Biden gets in, they're gonna be taking the vaccine. So where are you on this side now? Are you flipped now? Did people predict, hey, wait until Trump is out of office and all these conservatives are suddenly gonna hate the vaccine? When previous to that, they were like, hey, we should name it the Trump vaccine. Yes, Geraldo said that. So that flip also happened. Let's make sure we point out the potential partisan nature of this from every direction that we can. Number one, if you watch enough Tucker Carlson, you realize, I always point this out too. These guys are talking through a teleprompter. This is not questions that he's really curious about. Just again, when you see him say, I just wonder, what about this? And what about that? He's not really wondering. Some producer wrote that in a teleprompter and he's reading it. Or maybe he's part of the people who write it. I don't know his nature of his production of his show, but either way it goes, that's a planned sentence that he is reading from a teleprompter. These questions are not questions. These questions are posed to make you think a certain way. Because we already know when Tucker Carlson has something he wants to say to his audience, he says it because he speaks to them like they're 4-year-olds. You should do this and this is the way it is. They're doing this to you and he tells them the way it is, the way he wants them to believe. These questions aren't questions he's looking for answers to. These are to make you not believe what you maybe would have believed before in a Seinfeld fashion. What is it about these vaccines? I'm wondering what's going on. What's up with that? What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Now you have questions instead of directives towards your audience. This is, and also, by the way, he mentioned, you don't have to be a QAnon person to question these things. I remember a month ago, Tucker Carlson said this thing called QAnon. I thought he didn't know what QAnon was. Now it's a QAnon thing. Keeps going back and forth on whether or not he knows something or doesn't know.
Again, I'm very glad that you brought that up because he's not gonna come out and say QAnon is right, but he wants people who believe QAnon is right to watch his show. And so he just defends free thinking about QAnon. He won't actually say it's true, but he says, how dare you attack those who think it's true? He's not gonna say the vaccine will kill you, don't take it, but he wants anti-vaxxers to feel very comfortable on his shows. So he'll say, well, how dare they say that you shouldn't be spreading misinformation about autism and all that. It's this really cowardly thing where he wants to get them to watch his show, but he's not gonna ever say anything specific enough that you could actually link him to one of those things. He's just gonna spend the next couple months defending QAnon and the next couple months asking questions about the vaccine, which, as JR rightly pointed out, dude's got a billion producers. If he was really curious about these things, he wouldn't be reporting on his questions, he'd be reporting on the evidence they'd found. If he wants to know how much money they're making, he could have his producers figure that out and they could report on that. If they wanted to know what the actual side effects are, first of all that information's already available and you could definitely get the actual doctors who participated in it, or you have access to the White House briefings. As someone pointed out, Ducey Jr. could be asking your questions for you. You're not interested in the actual answers. You're interested in asking the questions. That's all. And for his own personal profit. He wants the biggest audience possible. And it doesn't matter if that leads to more people's families being torn apart because people believe in satanic conspiracy theories, or if more people get sick and die because they're not gonna take the vaccine. He doesn't give a damn about that. He's a rich guy looking out for his own interests. That's all he is. All of it is tools to that end. Everything from white supremacy to the anti-vaccine to QAnon to the constant misogyny, all of that stuff. It's just tools for him to maintain in a position of power and wealth. That's it.
I want to point out one more small thing about this production work. So they just had a bunch of shakeups at Fox News, and networks go through that where they'll shake up a show and send a host there and someone gets a new show. That happens all the time. Anchors, producers, all that, they pay attention to those things because that's their job. Like, what's gonna happen with this show? If TDR is like gets shifted around and suddenly it's, you know, the Francesca show, John's gonna be like, well, damn, what happened? What did I do? Because if you see that happening around you, you might go, let me make sure I formulate my show to be something that's solvent, something that hangs on, something that moves with this ever-changing political spectrum and nature. Not be honest with my audience. Let me just hold on to them. Because if I don't hold on to them, I'm gonna lose my show, or it's gonna be changed in some kind of way. So that's on the forefront of these guys' minds. It's their career, it's their money. He doesn't care about what's actually gonna go on with people's lives. He's doing this as a nice way, as you mentioned this whole time, keeping an audience or cultivating a new one. Because as long as you say, I'm the number one, which they always like to talk about, you still have a job and you're still making your millions.
I say that when you laid out this hypothetical where Francesca takes over, the fact that Francesca's face is all over the chat, that does not give me a lot of confidence. So thanks a lot for that, everybody. But anyway, thank you, JR. Great. Now pack your desk, John. Great. Wonderful. Thank you. Anyway, JR, how did we even have that image? Is that her biding her time?
What's her dragon name?
I don't know. Usurper dragon, I think. Anyway, thank you, JR, for being on the show. Everything up until the last minute, I appreciate.
I'm just trying. I'm coming down from the high right now.
You can never come down from the high if you never stop eating them. Anyway, thank you. I don't suppose Sprocket's within arm's reach.
Sprocket's in some other room somewhere.
Okay. Well, thank you as always, JR. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. See you guys.
Just a couple of weeks ago, a group of 50 prominent women put a full page ad in the New York Times calling on the new president, Joe Biden, to implement what they're calling a Marshall Plan for moms. But not everyone supports this particular approach. Our next guest is the founder of Moms in Office, Simona Grace. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Glad to have you here. So what is your opposition to the proposed Marshall Plan for moms based on?
I have a few opposition about this, and I would like to start with the fact that this is just so representative of what's going on in our country today, that our government is not responsive to the needs of the American people. Do we really need a full page paid ad in the New York Times by prominent women and celebrities for our government to pay attention? And do the American people really have the confidence to believe that our government works for us? So I don't like this approach because I think we have lost so much confidence in our leadership. And also the gendered language that they use, this is the type of language and lawmaking that we have been fighting against for the past 50 years. In 1972, Ruth Bader Ginsburg argued that Charles Morris should be able to claim a tax deduction for caregiving expenses. So I find this ironic that now we're asking for $2,400 a month for caregiving for female caregivers only in the home for their unpaid labor. There are so many ways that we can approach this. This is a problem. Moms are struggling. I'm a single mom. I can tell you myself, this has been a tough 11 months. But let's look at some economic policy that actually makes sense, that's inclusive.
So is it that you basically say, you basically believe that more aid should be given, that the sort of economic impact and time spent on caregiving is important, but that you would prefer an approach that isn't founded on one particular gender?
Absolutely. I don't think we can write laws in 2021 in the United States based on gender. And when we're looking at moms and women and why they are so hard hit and why they're struggling so long, there are a few reasons for that. One reason being that the industries that are hard hit during this recession are employing more women, such as education, leisure, and travel, and so retail, and so on. So we have to continue to support these industries and implement programs like the Paycheck Protection Program to make sure that these women can return to their jobs. We have to spend more resources on the safe reopening of our schools. We should be able to give families tax credits and stimulus payments, but not based on gender, based on need.
Do you think that, I know that the new aid bill hasn't been passed yet, but there's conversations about what it should include, and we have a pretty good idea so far, although it might change, of what it is going to include. How far do you think what's currently being included will go towards addressing some of the concerns that you're expressing?
I think we have a really good chance of passing this legislation, and it's really good news for working families. We just heard this week that President Joe Biden proposed to increase the tax credit, the child tax credit, to $3,600 for children under six, $3,000 for children between 6 to 17. There's talk about dispersing these payments as monthly payments between July and December. These cash payments for American families who are struggling could be a game changer. These payments could lift millions of children out of poverty. So we have a very good chance of passing this. But again, you know, Joe Biden needs to fight for the American people and not for bipartisanship and make sure that he keeps pushing this legislation.
So aside from what's currently being discussed, I mean, he came in, he had his executive orders in several different areas. We now have the COVID aid bill that's being discussed. What isn't currently being proposed that you would like to see done that could help in this area?
I am really disappointed about the $15 minimum wage. The fastest growing segment of minimum wage workers in our country today are mothers. Women are overly represented in low wage jobs. The minimum wage could give 40 million American workers a lift. We can no longer work 40 hours a week and live below the poverty line and take care of our children. The $15 minimum wage is way overdue. I believe it should actually be $25 an hour. I am very disappointed, but it looks like they're not going to be able to push this bill through if they keep the minimum wage. So we have to keep fighting for this. This is one thing that women need in order to get economic justice, to be empowered economically.
And so originally that was going to be included, but Biden seemed to indicate that that's probably not going to happen. He says he'll return to it. Do you have faith that they will return to it later on this year? And if so, so long as the filibuster remains, if they're not able to do this through reconciliation, do you have any faith that something like 10 Republicans would possibly cross over and increase the minimum wage?
I don't have any faith in the Republicans, which is so sad. I would love to tell you that I have faith in this passing. Yes, it's not going to pass through reconciliation. We know that. But Bernie Sanders introduced the bill, Raise the Wage Act, and he's proposing the $15 minimum wage. We can push for that separate legislation to go through. But it's going to be up to us. We're going to have to push this administration to make sure that the progressive policies that they promised us actually will become reality.
Interesting. Well, that's certainly the story for a lot of different areas going forward. Simona Grace of Moms in Office, appreciate you joining us today on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.